Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
My face. I'm even a taxpayer. I paid for this building. What's this about?
We've got some work to do. I don't mind, by the way, being responsible. I expect to be held responsible for these issues because I'm the president.
He hit me in my face on the left side and knocked me back to the floor, and that's when a woman started kicking me in the back of my head and in my back.
As I was walking in, I saw a lot of signs outside saying mean things about reform and health care.
I've seen some of those signs.
And he's gonna judge you.
You don't trust me? I don't know what else I can do.
Well, that's the actual sound of America. They've awakened the sleeping giant of America, the real Americans, not the Acornites, not the AFL-CIO thugs with clubs. The actual Americans are awakened. Now, I want to talk about health care and tort reform because I started it yesterday. No one else in the media seems to get it yet. They will very soon. And that's because the lawyers are running America, the American Trial Lawyers Association. If you look at the 1,000-page report on what they want to do with health care in this country, the Obamaites, most of whom are lawyers themselves, did you know that Kathleen Sebelius, the blonde lady, middle-aged, nice-looking blonde lady, she was actually the head of the Kansas Trial Lawyers Association for almost 10 years. They're in like moles into the Obama administration. It's estimated that $500 billion could be saved if defensive medicine were not practiced by doctors in America. I'll repeat the number, and I'll tell you what that is in a minute. If you've been to a doctor recently, he's probably ordered a test for you that you may or may not have needed, a CT scan, an MRI, ultrasound. He does it because he's afraid of a lawsuit from one of the leeches called the trial lawyers who go after doctors for no reason in most cases. These tests could be cut back and save the healthcare system about $500 billion a year. I have not been able to find one page in the Obama plan that would rein in the lawyers. California has a limit of $250,000 on any lawsuit to do with medical liability. As a result, the vermin have left the state. The door slammed on their backsides as they ran to other states to ply their verminous trade. These lawyers are gone, by and large, from the state. Yes, they're still attacking companies that produce things, but they can't attack the doctors in the state the way they used to. Yet there's no such plan in the Obama administration. So I told you, you want to cut health care costs? Start with the lawyers. Cap medical liability claims. This is a good idea, isn't it? Anyone disagree with me? Tell me why. Now, I know one of the lawyers will call and tell me that's because what if a person, you know, has an artery cut and dies? Is their life only worth $250,000? I'm sure I'll hear that. What wonderful work they do for humanity, the trial lawyers. But okay, we'll do that if you want. There's another way to save billions and billions of dollars a month. Cut off all medical care to illegal aliens. That's a no-brainer. They're not citizens. They're not entitled to it. Put a cop, a highway patrolman, in every emergency room in America. No ticky, no laundry. No citizenship. Sorry, can't supply you with any free medical care. See, it's human nature to get care for free or get anything for free if it's out there. If you're going to go to, I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to give you an easy example. There's a farmer's market near me that I bicycle to every Wednesday, it appears. These are poor people trying to make a few cents. They're mainly Mexican people, some Indian people. They grow their own food. They make their own food. They set up a stand. They try to, how much can they make a day? $50? $100? I see liberal after liberal, the gray-haired ponytail left-wing vermin of Marin County. They go from stand to stand taking free samples. They go there and graze like the cheapskates that they are. They take a piece of a peach. Then they take another piece of a peach. Then they talk to the poor guy who is nice enough to talk to them. Then they don't buy anything. Then they go to the Indian. They get a piece of cake for nothing. Mmm, come on, Molly. It's free stuff down there. You know, it's the farmer's market, and we vote for Obama. Peace. Peace to everyone. Now, you see, there are cheapskates who will do this to a system. If it's free, they're going to take it for nothing. And most of them are liberals because it's against the credo of a real conservative to do this to a poor person. Let me tell you right now, I don't think a conservative would go stall to stall and rob food from poor people, which is what these libs do in Marin. So I have a plan, and it's related to the health care. What if it said samples 5 cents each? You know these cheap liberals wouldn't even pay a nickel for a piece of 5 cents I should pay for a piece of a peach? 5 cents I should pay for a piece of cake? 5 cents I should pay for a chip? They wouldn't pay it. They'd stop taking it for nothing. It's the same with your medical system. People are using the system and abusing the system because everything is free. I told you this yesterday. Make them copay $25 a visit. You don't like that? That's too high. Make them copay $10 a visit. You would cut down on the grazers. You'd cut down on the people who were doing it for sport. In 1981, I wrote a book called The Skeptical Nutritionist that was published by Macmillan Publishing. And I coined a phrase called, recreational medicine. I used the phrase in my book, recreational medicine. And it was little accepted at the time. People didn't understand how far ahead of my time I was. But it's exactly what we have in America today. We have recreational medicine. And this is encouraged by many different forces in the country, primarily the drug industry. The pharmaceutical manufacturers encourage recreational medicine because each time one of these grifters goes to a doctor for free, Medicare, Medicaid, whatever, the doctor, to protect himself, practices defensive medicine and prescribes either a procedure or a prescription. And so it doesn't cost the doctor to do so, but he's got to do it to protect his back end from the lawyers. But the drug companies are all too happy to comply by giving another prescription, which is why most people over the age of 50 are on 6, 7, 8 medications. When I go in for a blood test or whatever, they say to me, routinely, blah, blah, blah. Okay, Michael Savage, blah, blah, blah. How old are you, blah, blah. Which medications are you on? And I say, none. They always look up at me. They say, none? How could that be? I said, well, I watch what I eat, I exercise, and I've taken vitamins all my life. So, and I've been lucky, okay? I was lucky. I told you, it's only tomorrow everything could change. I could be on 12 medicines tomorrow. I understand that things change. I'm not a fatalist in that regard, but all right. But what I'm saying is people are on a lot of drugs because the system wants them to be on a lot of drugs. But let's go back to the farmer's market analogy so you don't miss the main point. This is something even Democrats can follow and understand. You go to a farmer's market, you got poor people trying to sell a peach, a plum, a watermelon, a piece of bread, a cake that they made, whatever. And in order to encourage the people who come to the farmer's market to buy their product, they let them have a little sample for free. Most people will not take that sample for free and not buy something. Most will taste it and buy. But a large percent, let's say a small percentage, and I've watched them, they're usually older men with ponytails who have Obama stickers on their brains. They go from stall to stall. Mmm, that's a good peach. Where'd you grow it, Mr. Gonzalez? Well, that's great. I'll think about it. I'll be back. And Mr. Lib then goes to the Indian guy selling roti. Mmm, very good. How do you make it in your culture? Chomp, chomp. Mmm, can I have another piece? And they go from stall to stall to stall. They eat a free lunch that way. Now, what if you charge that cheap liberal 5 cents a sample? Chances are he'd stop his behavior, wouldn't he? So now take my analogy and apply it to doctors. Charge him $10 a visit, $10 copayment. Make it $20 copayment, make it $10 copayment. And a lot of the grifters would stop abusing the system. So I've given you three ways to save hundreds of billions of dollars a year. One, first stop the torts, introduce tort reform. Limit all medical liability lawsuits to $250,000 no matter what happens. That takes the psychos out of the system. And that takes the greed out of the system. That will save maybe $1 trillion a year. Now, where do I come up with $1 trillion a year? If doctors are practicing defensive medicine where they're ordering expensive MRIs, expensive ultrasounds and such, and CT scans, for fear of a lawsuit, it's estimated that if we could stop the defensive medicine practices, we could save $500 billion. So that's a half a trillion right there. Now put in place the other side of it. You start putting in place the no illegal aliens getting medical care in America, unless they pay for it. Make them pay cold cash. After all, they're sending $25 billion home to Mexico every year. Make them pay for the medical care. Let the hospitals and doctors get paid. I have no problem with them being treated. Let them pay for it the way I paid for it when I was young and poor. Let him pay for it the way my father paid for it when he got a heart attack and couldn't work anymore. It came out of his pocket in advance. I'll never forget. He had a heart attack. God rest his soul. He's laying in an oxygen tent. We didn't know if he would go minute to minute. It was frightening. So we go to the doctor, the great God. How is he? He says, well, it's like your father had a blowout. It's like a car had a blowout in a tire. Yes. Did you patch it? Well, we put a patch on the tire, but it could blow out again any minute. Thank you. I never slept again another night. I never had another night's sleep after that. But the fact is, the doctor said it will cost you $100 a week for my continued care, meaning coming to the hospital once a day for 7 minutes. Now you say, well, what the hell is the big deal, $100 a week? Let me tell you what $5,000 a year was at that time. It was like maybe $50,000 a year today, $25,000, $30,000. I don't know what it is. $100 a week for a doctor to come to the bedside was a lot of money. But you know what? The family paid for it. We paid for it. He had put aside money for this day, for this rainy day. Did we like paying it? No. But we had to pay it, so we paid it. So why can't the immigrants from Mexico, El Salvador, Guatemala, Costa Rica, Belarus, Italy, and wherever they come from, why can't they pay for their medical care? I did, and I'm an American who was born here. So I've given you three different methods to cut down on health care costs that would save about $1 trillion a year. Have you heard one of these ideas discussed by these criminals called senators or congressmen? If you have, I'll tell you what, I'll eat my hat. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, so I understand that the jerk who runs CNN, Mr. Klein, which means small, Mr. Smallman of CNN has banned talk show hosts from CNN. Now, of course, I've never been invited on CNN because I can mop the floor up with them, as is true with any other network. The reason they don't want me on is I can mop the floor up with five of them at once. But he said that we need serious debate right now. We can't have anyone from talk radio on CNN. Well, I've given you serious debate, and I'm on talk radio, right? I'm a talk radio host. I didn't just give you rhetoric. I gave you three ways to save between $500 billion and $1 trillion a year in the medical system. What's intriguing to me is that Obama, the imposter, is trying to impose European-style medical care in America. Now, whether or not you want it or not is one thing, but he's not putting in the controls that the European medical system has to go with it, such as lawsuit controls. If I'm not mistaken, and we're researching it right now, the socialized medical systems in Europe do not permit the kinds of lawsuits that the crooks with law degrees practice here in America. I think that there are strict caps on lawsuits to do with medical malpractice in Europe. How come the great Obama, who's trying to impose a European system on us, won't impose some of the controls? Because he was put in primarily by special interests like the American Trial Lawyers Association. So I've given you that. Cap the lawsuits. Cut off all care to illegal aliens. They're not citizens. Make them pay for it. And the third one, I can give you a third, fourth, fifth. I can give you five different ways to save money. You haven't heard one of these things in the debates, have you? Now you know why they don't want Michael Savage on television. Kansas City, Bridget, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation. You disagree on tort reform. Tell us why.
Because I think there are some legitimate cases where $250,000 is just not fair. It's not fair.
Well, not fair to who?
Well, it's not fair to me personally
Tell us about your case.
I had a hysterectomy. And during the procedure, the doctor put a stitch through the rectum, which tore open, and they didn't listen to me tell them I wasn't feeling well, I wasn't doing well, and a week later I was full of what's supposed to come out the other end, severe septic shock.
Horrible, horrible, horrible.
I spent,
and what happened? You couldn't collect on that lawsuit?
No, I spent 6 weeks in a coma. I almost died, like four times.
But I'm saying, did your lawyer sue the hospital or doctor?
Tried to.
And what happened?
We finally settled before it got to court, but for you know, a pittance.
Well, wait. Well, why did you settle?
He did. The doctor.
But why? You just said that you don't want tort reform, and now you're telling me you had a lawyer who sued and settled. So it's not making sense. You weren't impacted by any kind of limits on medical liability. You were impacted by your lawyer who settled for you.
We settled in advance of our, you know, the whatever your limit is, you're to your limit.
All right. Thank you for the call. Well, let me put it to you this way. There probably are egregious examples of medical malpractice that no amount of money could pay for. I agree with that. But when you balance out the entire system of medical malpractice claims, you have to understand that it will balance itself out. You take a guy like John Edwards. He made hundreds of millions of dollars. Remember John Edwards? He made hundreds of millions of dollars convincing juries in the Ozarks, you know, moonshine, the descendants of moonshiners, who was sitting there, didn't understand anything, but the pretty boy comes in and tells him, this poor person was injured by the doctor, when in fact he knew it was a congenital disease, that the person was born that way. It had nothing to do with the hospital or doctor. But old John Edwards convinced the Ozarkians that the doctor was at fault, and he broke out many, he destroyed hospitals and doctors across the Southeast. So what I'm saying is you get rid of some of these vultures, and in the long run, the whole society would be better off. But look, the bigger issue is Obama's deception. He's trying to impose a European-style socialized medical system. That's a given. Whether, you know, how draconian it is, no one knows as of yet. But it's European-style socialized medicine without the controls built into the European healthcare system, which include caps on lawsuits, by the way. And if I'm also not mistaken, the European system does not give unlimited medical care to illegal aliens.
Savage.
I don't believe this is just about health care. It's not about TARP. It's not about left and right. This is about the systematic dismantling of this country. I'm only 35 years old. I have never been interested in politics. You have awakened the sleeping giant.
That's what's going on in America. The Democrats, we have to thank them for it by electing this far-left radical professor and trying to push so many left-wing socialist programs so fast upon the American people. They have, in fact, awakened the sleeping giant. Now, of course, they're going to suppress it. They're going to bring out the goon squads, and they're going to try and beat you into submission. They're already shutting you off the televisions. All of the minions in the television media have shut you down. And the only outlet you're going to have is on the Internet and on talk radio. And so here we are. We do not have a very pretty picture ahead of us. We do not have smooth sailing ahead of us. Don't assume that because you have been heard that they're going to listen. They heard you, but they're not listening. They're going to get around you, and they're going to try and railroad this anyway. And they're going to do it by buying the few congressmen or senators who might be representing the American people. Now, I agree with you that come 2010, there's going to be a wholesale firing of the Democrats in the House of Representatives, and many senators are going to go as well. I don't think the Republicans are going to win, nor should they. I think the bum should be thrown out as well. I think we need independent candidates. You say, well, without money you can't win. I don't know if that's going to be true anymore. I almost think that any person with any prominence who has any name already made for himself or herself in the media or around the media or with a book or with a column can run for office and beat any incumbent. I truly believe the American people have had enough with these. I believe that when you read in China, I'm going to go to China now. Do you know that the prostitutes in China have a higher rating? The people trust prostitutes more than they do the rulers of China, the leaders of China, their legislators, so to speak. Prostitutes are more trusted in China. Hookers are more trusted in China than are politicians. I can guarantee you the same would be true in America. I would say you could pick any profession or semi-profession that you want, and you will find that those people are more trusted than the professional class of leeches in Washington. And I believe that we could see a wholesale meltdown of the two-party racket in the next election. That's if we're still here. And I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't know what these people are going to do. I know that when you corner a rat, the rat gets vicious. And this Democrat rat is cornered right now, and it's going to get very vicious. They're going to unleash the dogs on you. Watch out where they're going to come from. They're going to invent things. They're going to make things up. They're going to do an Oklahoma City. They're going to do a war. Something's going to happen. Mark my words. It may be the dogs of August right now. Maybe the dog day afternoon, the dog days of August. I am telling you that this government is desperate right now. And this group of gangsters who have waited 50 years to take complete power over this country, they're not going away so fast. They're capable of anything. Look what they did to Michael Savage. They got away with it, by the way. Make no mistake about it. You let me twist in the wind. Limbaugh let me twist in the wind. Hannity let me twist in the wind. Hemorrhoid let me twist in the wind. And I'm getting more pissed off at them than I am at the government. I expect this from the left-wingers. But I expected you to force these frauds to do something about it, because I am a member of the American media. I have been banned from a Western European nation, not for killing somebody, but for speaking my mind and for having my words taken out of context by a front group for Hillary Clinton funded by George Soros. That's exactly what happened. And I am telling you that if they can do it to me and they can continue to say to me things that they're saying and publish things about me that are untrue like this, it can happen to you and it's going to happen to somebody else very soon in this country. And there will be more on that soon. When I publish my book, Banned in Britain, and soon it'll be up on my website for you to buy, you're going to see the inside story of what they've done to me and what they're going to do to you. Now, the reason I bring this up is not to complain. It's to tell you why they went after me. I am the most outspoken critic in the radio business of the New World Order. There are many others who are onto this. There are many others who are ahead of me on this, on the internet. Many. Many. In fact, I dismissed it back in the 90s as crackpot stuff. But the more I've seen the closing circle of Marxism in the world, the more I have seen what Obama and his minions are doing, the more I have seen Hillary Clinton and Obama taking the side of a communist dictator in the Honduras, I've come to understand we've had a communist revolution in America. It's been a bloodless one, comma, thus far, period. But we've had a communist revolution in America on a light note. They are absolute Marxists. For them to have lined up with Zelaya, who was thrown out by their own people, by his own people, and by the Honduran Supreme Court, for them to turn that into a coup shows you the danger you are in. And so they've gone after me because I'm a critic of the New World Order. They want to suppress my free speech, and they have done so in England. But they've not done it to anyone else in America yet. They're trying to do it now to the town hall people. You got the minions like the little man at CNN saying no more talk radio hosts on CNN. Now, I'm not affected by this because I've never been invited on CNN, not in recent years. But others would go on and voice their opinions and give some good facts, others in talk radio. Well, they've cut you off, haven't they? That's because Klein, the little man who runs CNN, Kleinman, little man, little Klein, little Kleiner, a Kleiner little man, eine kleine Nachtmusik Klein. Little Kleiner, Kleiner Klein, Kleinich Klein has said no talk radio hosts on my network. Why? Because we need serious discussion of the issues. You need serious discussion of the issues? You need Nancy Grace for serious discussion of the issues? You need Wolf Blitzer for serious discussion of the issues? You need Anderson Cooper for serious discussion of the issues? These are all petty propagandists. So we understand to expect this from CNN. But the fact of the matter is, if you want serious discussion of the issues, I'm giving it to you on the Savage Nation. I have proposed three ways to cut back on health care costs that would save almost $1 trillion. One, cap medical liability lawsuits to $250,000 the way it's done in California. Number two, by doing that, you'll save about $500 billion, according to estimates done by serious scholars, in tests that are unneeded that are done as a result of defensive medicine from doctors who are afraid of being sued. Number three, put a cop or a state trooper in every hospital No tiki, no laundry, no citizenship, no treatment unless they pay for it. They're sending $25 billion a year home to Mexico. They can afford to pay for their child's flu treatment. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Michael Savage is one of the most popular conservative talk radio hosts in the country. His show, The Savage Nation, reaches more than 8 million listeners each week.
We so-called conservatives are actually the liberals of America. And the so-called liberals are the actual fascists of America.
Savage's disdain for the left is savage. One of his many books is called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. But listeners to his show get a lot more than politics, as Kelly Fasano tells us in his profile this week. Welcome back, Kay.
Thanks.
So the election of Barack Obama has put conservatives back in the opposition, and that has re-energized talk radio. Is that what got you interested in doing this piece? And why did you pick Michael Savage of all the conservative talk show hosts?
That's part of what got me interested in doing this piece. I'd heard him over the years and found myself listening to him a bunch last year during the election. And he was interesting partly because he seemed to be so off message.
Oh, I know what you're expecting, but you're not going to get it from me. You'll have to go to one of the other talk show hosts to get Obama's a Marxist and McCain is a war hero. If that's what you want from now until November, you're in the wrong dial position.
Savage, despite being identified as a conservative talk show host, didn't really seem to like McCain that much.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely hated Obama. Didn't really like Bush.
So he was reacting really differently than the other conservative hosts.
Well, you know, most of the other conservative hosts, no matter what the problems they might have had with McCain, mm-hmm. were they certainly supported him.
Right.
And Savage really didn't. But Savage has always been a really kind of unusual, weird guy. His mm-hmm. radio show isn't like anyone else's radio show.
Right. So he talks a lot less about politics than a lot of other talk show hosts do.
Well, he's a lot less single-minded. He has this weird cluster of interests. He's mm-hmm. interested in herbal medicine. Mm-hmm. He's interested in animals. He loves food. He loves to tell stories about, you know, New York in the 50s and 60s. And he loves to talk about his life in a really unusual way. He has this kind of melancholy, depressive streak. And,
mm-hmm.
and so the takeaway isn't necessarily, you know, we're going to rally the troops and we're going to get this done politically. The takeaway is often, I'm probably going to go home and drink tonight. And, and that makes him a really interesting, really compelling character on the radio. Mm-hmm.
When the New Yorker comes up on a show like Savage's or Rush's, it's generally not in glowing terms.
No.
Michael Savage is, my guess, not a longtime subscriber to the magazine.
Well, he is a longtime reader.
He is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he grew up in New York, and he has said he did grow up reading it.
So how hard was it to get him to talk to you, and how did you go about that?
Well, basically, I sent a bunch of emails to his people and finally got an email back from him. He
mm-hmm.
writes, all the emails I've ever gotten from him, I think, have been in all caps. And he was kind of like, what do you want? And so I kind of explained to him that I wanted to write a story about him, that I listened to his show, that I enjoyed his show. I think every email I wrote him, he read on the air.
Wow.
And so it was this weird kind of three-way conversation where I'd write him again in response to the discussion that I'd heard on the air. It was pretty strange. I think we have a clip of him describing one of the emails he sent back to me after I had written him asking him to please talk to me.
So I sent him this note and I said, the cartoon that goes with the story, will it show me in the Gestapo or an SA uniform? Surely you don't believe I don't know what you want to try to make of me. Why must everyone in journalism be so obvious? Why must all of you in the extreme media paint everyone you disagree with as demonic?
No, in fact, when I read your piece, I didn't think he came off as demonic at all.
When I actually finally kind of convinced him that, you know, we should sit down and talk and it wasn't going to destroy his career, you know, it was this kind of surreal thing because we had a great time and,
mm-hmm.
we had some beers and we sat on his porch and
mm-hmm.
he's a great host
mm-hmm.
and he was fun to talk to. I'd like to think he enjoyed the conversation and I think there's something about him that some part of him that thought it was really funny. On the radio the next day after the interview, one of the callers asked how it went,
right.
And he described me as looking a little bit like Obama, which which coming from him, I think, was a deeply twisted kind of compliment.
We're not going to play extended clips of him on this podcast, but it sounds like from your piece, part of what's interesting is kind of where he goes in the extended form.
One of the things Michael Savage does better than just about anyone is he really exploits the medium of radio and the fact that his show is happening in real time and that you're hearing his thought process in real time. One of my favorite segments ever came when, you know, he was doing a show and during the break, someone sent him an envelope with a photograph of his father who died many decades ago. And this threw Michael Savage off completely. It was amazing to hear those things kind of battling in his head, to hear him sort of trying to stay on topic, but getting thrown off topic by this picture in his hands.
Isn't it interesting how they love Islam? They can't get enough of it. They're experts in the Sunni sect, the Shia sect. Now you see, I'm what do you call it when you talk and talk and he looked good. Look at this. I can't get it out of my head. I shouldn't have looked at these pictures. He was, God bless him. A lot of good it did him, the wife. Black hair, thin, kept in shape, and dead.
So, you know, it's funny, but there's a real, you know, there's a real sense of loss and melancholy there, too. And there's something about the way he kind of lays himself bare on the radio that's, to me at least, riveting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't think of another political show where someone is so personal about their life.
Yeah, and so willing to go wherever free association takes them.
Savage. And of course, that was a podcast from the New Yorker magazine where they're talking about yours truly, Michael Savage. What's intriguing to me of what's happened since that came out. First of all, my taking a chance on meeting that writer, Mr. Senfa, paid off in the sense that it wasn't a hit piece. And I gambled that my instincts were right because I figured, look, if he's a music critic for 7 years, if he had been a music critic for 7 years for the New York Times, then he's hearing me. He's hearing the man underneath the polemics. He's hearing the artist underneath the polemicist. And he just might, you know, do the right thing, and he did. So, number one, it restored my faith in humanity. That's number one. But what's really weird is the way he's being treated by so-called liberals. They're ripping the New Yorker. They're ripping the writer. They're saying that he didn't treat me nasty enough. You can't believe what people are writing in these magazines now. These left-wingers are the new fascists of our time. You know, there are many decent people out there who say, all right, I'm a liberal politically. But they're not fascists. They're not radical left-wing fascists. What we have emerging in this country are radical left-wing fascists, and they're all around Obama. They're radical left-wing fascists. Don't you see the reactions? You got Congressman John Dinglebat up in Michigan saying that the last time he saw a protest like this was when the KKK protested him in the 60s. He doesn't realize that he, Dinglebat, Congressman Ding Dong, is now the KKK. He's got the white sheet on his soul. You got liberals saying that the New Yorker should have smeared me? Is that what they're saying? They didn't like the fact that the man was an actual writer and an artist who understood that there was a man underneath the polemics and that he was interested in the man who was underneath the polemics. So, yeah, they don't want it. They want a completely one picture, black and white, white and black, conservative bad, communist good. So there it is. Look, I don't think I want to talk about the healthcare thing anymore. That's why I went to the New Yorker interview. The reason is it's over. I gave you the 3-4 ideas. I mean, we can, but, you know, that's not – I can do politics. I want to show you that when it comes down to it, I can use my analytical mind. I can use my PhD, my master's degrees, my years as an author, as well as anybody in the country. And I'm very informed about the issues. But after a certain point, it becomes preachy, teachy, boring, goodbye. It's a hot summer day. It's August. I'm cognizant of the fact that most of you are on, you know, ball playing time or whatever, and that you heard enough and you made up your mind one way or the other. I'm just giving you 4 ways to cut healthcare costs that the Democrats are not even talking about because they're owned by these special interests. That's all. Now we can move on. Any other topic you want to talk about? I prefer something other. I'd rather do something else. I'd rather read about Fat Al's tuna or Tippy dies and is thrown in a garbage truck, or Rome comes into history. You want me to do a little pieces of history? The dynasties of Sui and Tang in China? How about Muhammad and Islam? I did that once. Everyone liked that. How about the great days of the Arabs or the early days of Latin Christendom? Boring, huh? How about the intellectual revival of the European? The American War of Independence. There's so many things we could talk about other than healthcare reform. I mean, I watch too much television, I admit it. So I often watch either Military History or National Geographic. National Geo is very left-wing and very full of fright now and fear, but the graphics are amazing. Every day another comet's going to hit and wipe life out, you know. Every day another strata is discovered to prove that we're nothing but atoms walking around. You know, we have no souls, no nothing. It's horrible. It makes you just wonder why I get up in the morning if we're just going to disappear like we were never here. So last night was a topper. Last night was they drain the oceans for us and show us what's underneath the... So they go to the Hawaiian Islands or the Bahamas, and they show you there's a reef, a canyon off the Bahamas that's like, 5 miles deep. And that the Bahamas are the top of a chain, a mountain. I couldn't follow it all. I don't know what they were getting at. Then the Hawaiian Islands are disappearing. I lived there for 6 years. Obama came from there. How do you comprehend these things? One scientist after another, the islands rose up, and they're not really islands. They're not the tops of mountains. They may actually be a result of earthquakes that came up and pushed up, and the ridges collapsed. And as the ridges collapsed, they created, and the islands are slowly falling into the... Good God! You mean everything's going to disappear? It's all doom and gloom. So it's very difficult to deal with television these days. Everything's a nightmare. So you try to find something positive. It's not easy. It's very hard to find entertainment per se. And I think I'm through watching Mad Men. I'm through with it. I realize it's so negative. It's so cynical and negative. I'm never going to watch it again. It's making people sick. I don't recommend it at all. I highly recommend you don't watch Mad Men. It's a horrendously negative set of stereotypes written by very small-minded people. The more I've watched it, the more I realize the genius of artists and how negative and how they poison your mind. Thumbs down to Mad Men. Never watch it. It's dangerous.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Talk Radio, Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. I've given you four methods of reducing costs in the healthcare system, none of which have been offered by the Obama administration, other than the hatred coming out of the mouths of Specter, McCaskill, Sebelius, Congressman Ding Dong, and the others. They're in the hands of the special interests, as you well know. So since I've covered the waterfront politically and given you some good ideas, we're going to do other stuff. In the last hour, I played a webcast from the New Yorker folks who did the article on me. And I raised the issue of liberals attacking the New Yorker for not having made me look bad enough. They didn't like the fact that they didn't make me look bad. And I want to ask you listening to this show, those of you who read, those of you who still read magazines, publications, websites, which magazines, which websites, which channels are attacking the New Yorker for having not made Michael Savage into an evil man. Lance in San Francisco on KNEW, you're first up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I was able to read the article written by Khalif Sana in The New Yorker, and I thought it was a very even-handed piece. But before I was given the magazine by the individual that had it, I was told that it was a puff piece. I was prejudiced against my understanding of it before I'd even read it. So I just thought you'd like to know that. It's a puff.
What do you mean? It was a puff piece because it didn't make me into Hitler? Is that it?
Apparently so. You weren't demonized enough, as far as I can tell.
So what? So who gave it? A friend gave it to you, you mean?
It's a friend who subscribes. I looked around on newsstands to try to find it, but I guess you've sold it out, so I knew.
Yes, we sold out the magazine because conservatives read. You know what's interesting, Lance? The New Yorker, according to what I've read, has a circulation of about 1 million a week. And they're basically, you know, liberal, intelligent readers of the liberal persuasion. I think they were shocked that the profile of me, which put me in the league with really phenomenal people, many of whom are my heroes, shocked them because they wanted to continue to hate me, Lance.
On, and I guess that the education that liberals wanted to provide to all of us didn't reach us, and we think differently than they do.
Yeah. What's interesting is none of my neighbors who think that they're also intelligent, none of the people who live near me in any of my properties apparently read The New Yorker. I thought they were all intellectual, intelligent liberals, but apparently they don't even read The New Yorker. I don't know what they read. I don't know how neighbors get the idea that they're intelligent if they don't read anything. Thanks for the call. So, I mean, I don't want to do doctors and hospitals. What else is in the news? Let's see. Oh, Bill Clinton says, I haven't seen Hillary's outburst. You heard about that one. Some poor African guy asks her a question about what her husband thinks about this or that. She goes crazy in Africa. And she says, I'm the Secretary of State. How dare. Poor African guy didn't know he wasn't allowed to say that about Bill Clinton. Bill, of course, was not in Africa with his spouse. He was partying on his 63rd birthday in Las Vegas. God bless him. See, I trust Bill Clinton now more than I do Obama. Because any man who made that amount of money so fast after the presidency and enjoys the perks of being a rock star, you know, private jet travel through friends, all legal, by the way, he can't be a Marxist anymore, even if he was oriented that, which I doubt. He's thrown it all away. He hangs around with billionaires. So how in the world could he be a Marxist? I mean, politically, the guy was a centrist when you look back upon his period in office. You know, it's interesting. When Clinton was president, the whole thing came up with Monica Lewinsky. I was really not very heavily into it because my mother, may she rest in peace, she died, I think, during that time period. When I asked her, I said, Ma, she was in her 80s. I said, she was a lifetime Democrat. I said to her, Ma, what do you think of Bill Clinton having sex with Monica Lewinsky? She says, they all do it if they can get away with it. She was, a realist, my mother, meaning she never expected them to have halos. So I took her advice. I mean, that was the worst thing that anyone ever did. I did not have sex with that woman, so I didn't really cover it that much. When Bush was president, I almost prayed that we'd catch him with a woman. It would have taken away some of the problems we had. I used to hope that maybe one day we'll wake up and hear there was a scandal, something. There was nothing, not a beer, nothing. That's why it was such a horrible 8 years. It's the same with Obama. Watch out for these purists. They're the ones who are the most dangerous. Do you know that? I guarantee Obama's a pure guy. Probably doesn't cheat on his wife. Probably has an occasional beer. They're the most deadly politicians. The purists are the ones to watch out for. I like Berlusconi. If you say to me, which world leaders do you like the best, and what kind of leadership would you like to see in America? I'd say Silvio Berlusconi would be one of the top types that I'd like to see running America. But it's not going to happen, so we're going to get what we get here. Where are we? What time is it? Where are we? Let's see what else is in the news. Governor Patterson finds insurance company. Who is he? Governor who? Oh, the accidental governor. 1-800-449-8255. Let's see. Big warning from bad government's overseer. Nonsense. Oh, New York City got a new immigration chief. Wow. Hey, that's terrific. Fatima Shama is the new immigration chief. That is so good. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is now naming Fatima Shama to be the new immigration chief. Do you think they'll crack down on illegal immigrants in Manhattan and New York City? I kind of doubt it. Play some jazz for me. I'm running out of steam here. I think I need a vacation. I'd like to go to a campground for about 3 weeks. I'm thinking of buying a campground because I don't want to go to one where anybody is there, actually. Look, I'm a loner. What could I tell you? If I have to listen to somebody for 1 minute, I go berserk. No, let me talk about that for a minute. Turn off the music. I went on the internet today because it's August already. I had enough of the politics of another book coming out. I'm burned out. So I started to look in certain areas of Placer County, California, which is some of the most has some of the most gorgeous lakes in the world, Gold Lake and things like that. So there's campgrounds up there that are on Forest Service land that are on long-term leases that the owners have. They have like five cabins, you know, some of them are rather primitive. Beautiful log cabins that I dreamed about as a boy. No television, you know what I'm saying? So I said, well, why don't I buy one of those lodges with five cabins, you know what I'm saying? And invite nobody there. Just be me and Teddy. Because I actually think at this phase of my life, I wouldn't be able to handle it. I don't think I could handle it anymore. Maybe when I was young, yes. But at this stage of my life, I don't think I could be alone in the woods anymore. I don't have a Thoreau thing in me. A lot of people go crazy, by the way, when they go back to nature. They don't tell you about that. Oh, yeah, it's a famous story. In the 60s, there was a couple. I forget who they were. They went back to nature. They were heroes of the liberals in the commie left, the peacenik, back to earth movement. And they moved to Alaska to get away from it all, right? And they used to write articles. They lived 6 months in Alaska in the outback. And then 6 months they live in the Caribbean when it got cold. So, all right, they have it both ways. All right, it's their business. Eventually, the guy walked into a propeller blade of a plane. He couldn't take it anymore. Just him and his long-toothed wife, you know what I'm saying? And the mosquito. Him and the mosquito and the wife. He walked into the propeller of the plane that came to get him. This is the problem. You can't do the back-to-nature thing anymore. It's too late. Thoreau is dead. I'll be right back. Savage. It is Savage Part 2. Listening to Topsy Part 1. Remember when this came out? This was such a big hit. It was good. Why does the left have such bigotry against conservatives? Why is the left so hateful? Why is the left so hateful against Southern whites? Why is the left so in love with ethnic minorities, even criminals? Why, oh, why have the American people put a radical leftist into power? These are just some questions I'm asking. Let's go to the callers, 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. I know how to load the lines up. I mean, they're all lit now, but all I got to do is say is marijuana is bad for you and give you the medical proof for it, and you'll go crazy. I wonder if Obamacare includes pot in every chicken. They say that the dictators in the past used to promise a chicken in every pot. It seems to me that under Obama, they're going to promise pot for every chicken. Sacramento, Tony, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, greetings from all your fans born in 1981.
Hey, thank you.
Recently, I went on a hike way up in the hills there and found a crystal clear, ice-cold lake, and I went swimming in it, and it was one of the most refreshing things I can remember in the past. I wondered if you were a swimmer, and if you...
I am. I'm a very good swimmer. I'm a former lifeguard. I haven't saved anybody's life, but I'm a former lifeguard. Yeah, I'm a very good swimmer to this day. And the question is what, Tony?
Do you take advantage lately of the ice-cold, beautiful mountain?
You know, you're raising a very interesting point. I've read that immersing yourself in ice-cold water, although it's shocking, is one of the most healthful things you can do. I have an aversion to cold water. I don't really like cold water, Tony. Maybe what I need right now is throw myself in San Francisco Bay. I don't mean off the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm saying pull my boat into a cove. It's 58 degrees, the water, though. That's the thing. It's cold.
No, go up to a lake up on Mount Lassen and take a dive.
Yeah, what's the water temperature in a lake up there?
I don't know, but it was perfect. Probably a little bit warmer than 58 degrees.
Okay. Well, I remember there was an area in Alpine Meadows, California, that's a stunning. There's an area called Five Lakes. You probably don't know that area. In 1980, I was hiking up there a lot with family when the kids were young. I even was able to backpack one of my children on my back all the way to the top of the lake. You get up there in August, there's still snow on the ground, which to me is miraculously beautiful. And the lake, the ice has finally melted out in late August. The water is like ice water, you know what I mean, Tony? And at that time, Mrs. S. swam in that lake. I couldn't even put a toe in it. Some people have a capacity for cold water. I don't have it.
You should try again.
Yeah, you mean maybe it'll snap me out of my malaise?
It might do something for you.
Yeah, it could give me a heart attack altogether. Or either way, it's better off than what I have now. Oh, God, I shouldn't get... Thank you for the... No, you got to be careful. I don't believe in shocking the system. I have my own exercise regimen. It consists in watching 5 to 6 hours of television after... No. I bicycle every day. I really do. I don't mean... You see, this is... I'm going to talk about exercise. Am I at a break point here or what? Where am I? I'm fine. I could talk for 3 minutes. Good. Thank God the advertisers came back. We don't know what to do. We have so many advertisers. I don't know when I can talk or not talk. God bless them for advertising. You know, a lot of guys drop dead in their 30s way back when from excessive running. They would run and look at the watches. Bingo. Blowout. So I was a runner when I was in my 30s. I weighed, you know, I was thin, low cholesterol, runner. Till one day I was running up to a waterfall. Every day I'd run to a waterfall. And I heard an inner voice screaming at me, stop running, stop running, stop running, stop running. So I thought I went crazy. So I stopped running. Never ran again in the rest of my life. My body was warning me to stop running. And then in that period, that decade, there were a lot of very famous deaths of runners. Jim Fix, for example, was a very famous runner. He wrote for Runner's Magazine, and he dropped dead while running. So you say, well, what does that prove? I'm not saying it proves anything other than the body is not made for continuous stress of this kind, the kind of people put themselves through with exercise. So as time went on, I started to study different methods of what's considered to be exercise. And the Chinese have it right. The ancient Chinese had it exactly right, which is the moderate approach to it. No excessive pushing of the body. At least that's what I interpreted it to mean. I mean, maybe it's my own interpretation. So if I bicycle moderately, not until I'm in a sweat bath and looking at a watch. I'm not doing it to sweat. I'm doing it to get some balance in my body. Balance is one of the most important things you can get in your body. So bicycling is excellent for gaining balance alone, even if you just do it to keep your balance. I bicycle all my life, by the way. If I miss a day, I don't feel good. A couple of miles to town and back, go to look at people down in the mall, see what's going on, women, children, men, vendors. You know, it's like a touch of life. It's a real town. In a modern American suburb, the mall is actually our town, since there's no towns left to speak of. It's as good a town as any. So anyway, bicycle, look around, push around, get some, you know, yard time, go back to the prison of the computer and radio. But when it comes to pushing your body, I believe that many young men have it wrong, and they really push themselves too hard. They push and they push and they push and they run for a certain amount of time. They look good, don't get me wrong. They're thin, they're lean, they're in good shape. But I'm not so sure that that is so good to sustain for a very long period of time in your life. Moderate, moderate, moderate. And all you got to do is talk to an orthopedic surgeon about it if you think I'm making this up. The joints will go from excessive pounding. The hips, the joints are going to be replaced early on from the running. So there are other less, what do they call it? There's a word, less impact kind of sports that you can practice. But it's the same with weightlifting. You don't have to crunch weights for 5 hours a day. I mean, unless you're a Navy SEAL or something like that, or an Army Ranger or one of those. Of course, you want to be as hard as a rock. But I'm talking about the average person who wants to keep reasonably fit after the age of a certain age. That's all. You don't have to overdo it. That has been my philosophy. And thus far, it's worked for me. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I think that everyone has to come to their own ideas about what's going to work for them. And it comes back to the jumping in a cold lake. Now, maybe that's good shock therapy when you're young and it wakes you up. It's certainly invigorating. But I think after a certain age, if you leap into an ice-cold lake, you run the risk of a shock that could be fatal to your system. Things change, the body changes, people change, and you have to change with your age, you have to change with the ages as well. Nothing significant in what I just said at all, other than moderation and exercise is the best idea, and that Mark Twain got all of his exercise walking to the funerals of his more athletic friends.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So we've got the town hall meetings blowing up in the faces of the demon cats, the demagogues, with D after their name. And they never saw anything like this. They went out to basically sell the Obamacare program that the president can't sell, and it blew up in their face. I should say blew up in their faces because most of them have at least two. You know, you read all of these articles here, Ed Koch falling out of love with Barack Obama, and he says he's still a Democrat and he's a wonderful guy, and but he this and that, the health care plan and what's wrong with it and this, and that talks about kvetching with his bypasses again. It's always about him and his illnesses, Koch. I'm mentioning it for an example. But not one word in this article by Ed Koch, former mayor of New York, falling out of love with Barack Obama, not one word about tort reform, because he's a lawyer. Don't you understand what I'm saying to you, how you've been hoodwinked? Obama's a lawyer. Ed Koch is a lawyer. Everyone in the media is a lawyer or is run by a lawyer. So you never hear any discussion of tort reform. You could save $500 billion a year, according to conservative, or shall I say real estimates, of those who really know, by eliminating these lawsuits and cutting back the cap to $250,000. Are you aware that Kathleen Sebelius, Obama's head of Health and Human Services, was herself the head of the Kansas Trial Lawyers Association from 1977 to 86? And as a result, the doctors are practicing defensive medicine. And that is medicine practiced on the fear of legal liability rather than on a patient's interests. So people order CT scans, MRIs, ultrasounds, and they send them on to specialists for defensive reasons. The number is astounding. And healthcare spending could be $500 billion a year by one estimate, $200 billion by another estimate. And here's President Obama on June 15th to the AMA when he says, I want to be honest with you, I'm not advocating caps on malpractice awards, which I personally believe can be unfair to people who've been wrongfully harmed. So he's in the league with the American Trial Lawyers Association. So you take two of these ideas, which is you have to cap the lawsuits at $250,000 a claim. Number one, that's tort reform. And two, no free care for non-citizens. You want to treat them, they pay for it. You say, well, they can't pay for it. They certainly can. You can give them a discount, but make them pay for it. Right now, they get not everything's for free. So a guy comes in, let's say he's illegal from Guatemala, or El Salvador, Nicaragua, Mexico, wherever. He knows he can have anything he wants for nothing, so he's going to ask for everything. Yet they're sending home $25 billion a year to their home countries at the very least. Why not make them pay for their medical care? You're paying for it. Why shouldn't they pay for it? Yet Ed Koch, Obama, Specter, Congressman Ding Dong in Michigan, whatever his name is, all in spectacle, none of them will touch the issue of tort reform or not giving gold-plated medical treatment for non-citizens. I will, which is why I am banned in Britain. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the callers. Paul in New York, WOR. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. What I'm talking about right now is how the current situation is working and how it doesn't work. My wife went in to a dermatologist to get medicine for eczema. She wanted to get Elidil. That's what they prescribed for her. But my company here, they will only give her medicine if it doesn't get to this level where they wanted to prescribe her Elidil, right? Which is like $50 a tube.
All right. So the and the health plan doesn't pay for it?
No, they won't pay for it. They won't pay for Elidel. They'll pay for something lower than that that costs less until they see it doesn't work, and then they'll give her the Elidel. And it's something silly. It's a topical cream. I mean, it means really little.
What's your point? So why would you be willing to pay a $25 copayment for every prescription if need be, or if it's a prescription that costs over $100, would you be willing to pay something towards that cost?
No, but I'm saying.
No, I'm asking you something. If the healthcare reform package said that any prescription that costs more than $100, the person has to pay $20 for as copayment, would you pay it?
That's what I pay now. That's less than what I pay now.
Okay, so you are making a copayment.
Yes.
Okay, so even with a copayment, you can't get the drug that you need?
No, I can't.
So what prevents you from taking that prescription to a pharmacy and filling it yourself?
Well, it's the difference between paying the cost of the drug and paying what they'll cover it, basically.
Yeah, but I'm saying you could go and pay for it yourself, right?
Yeah, sure. It's $50. $50 for the tube.
So go buy one and see if it works. How big? I mean, you're paying copayment of how much now? You said more than $25. So what's the difference if you paid? You just took the RX and went and bought it for yourself.
Well, the problem is that, you know, this works. And the prescription company.
Well, what about reining in the lawyers? What about my two ideas? Irrespective of whether you're a Democrat or not, you know, that's your business. Why do we hear not one word about reining in lawsuits against doctors and hospitals? Why do we not hear one word about no more free medical care for non-citizens because we can't afford it? How come we don't hear this?
I have no idea.
Well, I'm raising the issues because I'm an independent. I'm not funded by anybody. I'm a man who can think clearly. And I'm telling you those two things alone will save us $1 trillion a year. Thanks for the call. Good luck with the eczema. San Francisco, ding, ding. Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation from KNEW. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'll tell you. When you struck a chord when you were talking about the moderate exercise, and you're absolutely right. About a year ago, well, a year and a half ago, in January of 2008, I was doing heavy squats, okay, with my trainer.
Right.
And she noticed that my right eyelid was drooping, and I had ptosis and meiosis in my right eye. The right eyelid was drooping. My pupil was small. I called my doctor. He said, "Look, that's a serious condition. You got to get to the hospital right now."
Right.
And I'll tell you what. I got to the emergency room, and later they gave me an MRI, and I had a carotid dissection. I mean, that, you know, I've all saw the move. When you're really pressing hard on doing heavy squats or any heavy movement, I was 40 at the time. And,
wow.
And I'll tell you what. Yeah, I mean, it blew out the inside of my right carotid artery.
Well, right, because your body can – look, it's common sense that when you strain your body – let's use old, simple terminology – not medical jargon, not big words. When you strain your body, you're putting pressure on internal organs. I mean, in common parlance, right? And some of those internal organs would include the vascular system. And so when you put extra pressure, internal pressure on your arterial system, your venous system, your, in other words, your vascular system, you're liable to break something, right, Dan?
Absolutely, and I did. I tore the inner lining in my right internal carotid artery. Right.
So how did immediate surgery saved you?
Well, I didn't need surgery. I needed to go on blood thinners for 9 months. I mean, and that stuff is just awful. I had to give myself a shot every day, and then I had to go on warfarin.
What were you on, Coumarin?
It's called Coumadin.
Yeah, it's Coumadin. I know how it was. People don't even realize how that was developed. You know that. I remember when I was studying pharmacology as a graduate student. I think it was a student in graduate school, designed a rat poison that if you put it into the food, the bait, the rat would eat the food, and the poison that he developed was the progenitor, the grandfather of the Coumadin. It caused bleeding. The rat would bleed to death. Did you know that?
It's rat poison. Exactly, I did. And
very few people understand that medicines and poisons are only a matter of dosage. You know that.
That's exactly. exactly. And it's an old drug. And I, you know, you're taking a controlled dose of rat poison.
Well, so today you've given up. The point of your story is a little different, though. It's about weightlifting and how it almost killed you. So obviously you've modified your exercise regimen.
Yeah. I don't. You know, I don't push myself. I do more cardio. I do push-ups, things with my own body weight. I do weights, but, you know, more reps, less.
When you do push-ups, here's another one. When you do push-ups, how many do you do? Do you do till you're gagging?
No. No, I'll do maybe 25 or 30, sometimes 50, but I don't do it till I'm, you know. Why do
right.
that?
So, that's exactly right. What I'm getting at. Think of Tai Chi when you do any exercise. Think of gentle motion. Think of slow motion, easy on your body. The body's not made for it after a certain age. You're not a kid anymore.
Exactly. And even kids.
Well, Dan, you read increasingly of young kids getting heart attacks today playing ball. It happens even to youngsters today because of the garbage food that they're eating. Their arteries are clogged.
Exactly.
Do you know that famous study of autopsies that were done on soldiers in the Korean War, then the Vietnam War, and what they found?
No.
Oh, well, hold on. I'm going to tell it to you on the air. And I think maybe if I'm not, well, I can't with any certainty say it was going back to World War II because I would be making it up. But I know for sure that there was a comparison done between the deceased soldiers, the autopsies, for example, of soldiers who had died in the Korean War and then of soldiers who they autopsied during the Vietnam War. And there was a degeneration of the arterial system, the cardiovascular system, that was dramatic as a result of dietary alterations in the American diet, rather. In other words, if you went back and you did an autopsy of guys who died in World War II, you would have found a much different picture internally that is in their arteries than you would have found, let's say, by 1952. And then you speed it up to 1969, it's a whole different story. Because the junk food diet had already become prevalent in America by the time these boys, God bless their souls, the guys who died in Vietnam, who had, you know, they already grew up. You're talking about guys who were born in 1950, et cetera, maybe 1950. So by then they were like, they're already eating junk food in the 50s. Back in the 40s, there was very little junk food. The diet was totally different back in the 1940s. And, of course, you go back and back and back. It's the same thing. You find more whole foods, less fat, less sugar in the diet. Right now we have a sugar epidemic in America. And you say, well, what does that have to do with arterial damage? Well, you read the work of the recently deceased great doctor. He just died. And he was one of my heroes. But I don't think I want to put his name out and have a rush on it. You know, the guys but he wrote about the sugar disease a long time ago. He said a good many of the degenerative diseases of our time are based on too high a quantity of refined sugars in a diet. He wasn't even laying the blame on the doorstep of the fats, by the way, which is a whole other controversial area. We are fat obsessed in the United States of America to the detriment of the health of many women and children. You see families today raising children on pure vegetarian or vegan diets, and the children are suffering. They're tired. They can't focus. They're not bright. They're getting vitamin deficiency diseases, and the mothers will not give them a hamburger. Oh, no, my child's never eaten red meat. Great. Great, but take a look at your child's health. My child's never had a piece of chicken. Well, I had this experiment when my children were little, and I told you about it. There were many people back in the day who were raising their children vegetarian. I wasn't, because I knew children needed a diet rich in protein, a certain amount of fat, etc. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I was totally into health at that time. You know, ground up apricots, vegetables. So don't think I was just feeding junk food. But mixed in with every meal was a high degree of good quality protein. You know, if I made hamburgers, I ground onions into them. So the long and short of it is if friends' kids would come over to dinner, and my kids were eating chicken, and the parent with the vegetarian child would turn her head. That kid would grab the chicken off my kid's plate. The child was starving. Now go to the women today, the young women. The skinny young women with perfect figures, so-called. The ones who look like post-op transvestites, which is the new model, let's say, for the American woman. It used to be a full-hip woman. A woman with a certain voluptuousness was considered the social norm. Today, because of various influences, which I don't have to spell out, a woman tries to look like a man who's had a surgery. These women are near insane, many of them, from a lack of nutrients such as iron. They're suffering iron deficiency. They're suffering deficiency of the B vitamins. They're suffering folic acid deficiencies because they have known nothing about food and diet. Nothing. They're not being taught anything about it. Many of them have anxiety attacks. They put them on pills. And the reason they'll take the pills is because it doesn't add any weight. It's not what they need. They need to go on a balanced diet, which means real food. So anyway, and by the way, you can be a vegetarian, don't get me wrong, if you know how to balance your foods. Please don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I wrote books on this going back 30 years ago, so I understand that. You can. It's very difficult, though. And then you have to supplement your diet with certain B vitamins, which you're not going to get from the vegetables. But people don't do that. They don't know it. But women are a special case. I mean, women are different than men with regard to things that occur in their body on a regular monthly basis. And during that phase of their month, they're losing a certain amount of iron, for example. They are deficient in iron, and it causes an energy loss. Women don't understand this, and they have to understand it. So anyway, look, this is well established in good old health books that were written, I would say, more than 10 years ago. You can't find a lot of this information anymore. And yes, I'm going to pitch you now. Buy Healing Children Naturally. Why? Because it actually has great diets for prospective parents who can't have children. There's a diet for pregnancy. There's diets for the father even prior to conception. You say, wow, that's quackery. All right, then go take drugs. See if I care. I'll be back.
Savage.
Michael Savage here, 1-800-449-8255. We're talking about many different things other than the healthcare reform issue, which is a big one, obviously. I've given you ideas to rein in costs, tort reform, no free care for non-citizens. Notice how you don't hear any of these ideas discussed by anybody, which is why talk radio is so important, number one. And, of course, why we in talk radio must continue to talk. The reason they want to shut us out of the debate is because we are not beholden to the lawyers. We're not beholden to La Raza. And, therefore, we present seriously important ideas. Daryl, Los Angeles, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I've been a martial artist for 30 years, and moderation is the key.
Well, you see, you probably teach Tai Chi, I would guess. I'm not sure.
Kempo karate.
But isn't karate something where you use extreme force?
Well, you're learning to create force, but you don't do it by stressing out your body, like you were saying. You do it by learning to create energy.
Interesting. You know, I've always been fascinated by martial arts and martial artists. I don't practice myself. I don't know anything about it. But the more I read, the more I'm amazed at the force inside a human being, and rather how you can draw force from literally from the air and direct it through your body. I'm astounded by it, Daryl. I think that's what you're talking about, right?
Called ki or chi in Chinese, the internal power.
And you but look, Daryl, let's be honest. You know I have chi energy for the radio, correct?
Yeah, correct. I agree with that.
All right, thanks for the call. So I know a little bit about marshaling chi energy in order to do this radio show 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Okay? Okay, last call right now. San Francisco, Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation. Mark.
Savage, it's an honor.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm in San Francisco for a couple days. That's the one thing I should be doing around the city.
So you want me to give you some tips on what to do as a tourist in San Francisco? Let's see. The new police chief who just came on board the other day said he was shocked to see an open drug deal right in front of the police station in San Francisco. So I could say if you want to see a drug deal, go to City Hall. That would be something to observe. If you'd like to see a bum urinating on something, you can go to City Hall and see him urinating on the front steps of City Hall. There's another interesting sight that you can send home to Peoria. But if you want to look at beautiful things, I'd say go down to Fisherman's Wharf at the end of the day and watch the fog blow in through the Golden Gate. It's a sight that you'll never forget as long as you live. But bring a coat, bring a sweater. But watching the fog blowing in through the gate at the end of the day is unbelievably miraculous. Go over the Golden Gate Bridge, go to Sausalito, and watch the fog drift down over the hills at the end of a day. It's a sight you'll never forget. That's if you love fog in the summertime, as I do. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number, as you well know, is well established. Look, remember, all of my books were written as a centrist. I considered myself a centrist as a nutritionist way back when, and I am a centrist when it comes to politics, believe it or not.
Savage.
I never picked him out. He picked me out.
They trained for 8 hours a day. That's the only person the dog knew.
Their smell and hearing is so acute.
I couldn't imagine going into a jungle without a dog.
I'd know they were close before they ever got there.
But oh my God, they're shooting red bullets.
They saved hundreds of lives, including mine.
There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think of that dog.
I recently talked about an amazing film about the use of dogs in World War II entitled War Dogs of the Pacific. And you can find it at wardogsmovie.com. Joining us now is the director of this documentary, Harris Dunn. Mr. Dunn, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
This is an amazing collection of stories about these dogs. What gave you the idea for this documentary?
Well, I first learned about the War Dogs of the Pacific when I was shooting a documentary for Steven Spielberg and Stephen Ambrose about World War II in the Pacific called Price for Peace. And we were interviewing a gentleman named Bill Putney on the invasion beaches of Guam, and he was telling his story about invasion and that he was a lieutenant of a war dog platoon. And this was the first time I'd ever heard anything about the Marines using war dogs and the way that they used them. And his story was so incredible that just that day on the beach, I just looked over to the director of the film, who was an old friend of mine, and just said, "This is the greatest dog story I've ever heard." And I have a dog at home as well, and so just listening to these stories and listening to the bond between the guys and their dogs and the things they went through, it just really, really touched my heart, and I just felt like, I got to make this movie.
Well, the bond between the soldiers and their dogs was quite a bit different from your average family dog bond.
Yeah, well, without a doubt. I mean, it's something that, it's clearly, it's a bond forged, you know, under combat, and the stakes were so great, you know, and I think it's one of the three dog stories because it's this time that there's this cooperation between man and animal to achieve a common goal, you know, using the dog's, you know, unbelievable, you know, senses, their sense of smell and hearing to achieve this goal was just incredible. And that's how they really were most effective is when they were used to lead combat patrols and the dog and the handler would be on point and the dog could literally sense or smell or hear a hiding Japanese soldier or soldiers, you know, who were laying in wait trying to ambush them. And that's really what they trained them to do. They just basically trained them to you know, look for people and, you know, whether it's by hearing or by sight, and they achieved that. And that was really how they were most effective. But they were also very effective at night, standing watch, you know, in a foxhole with a soldier or, you know, out on an outpost or patrol, out on the outer, you know, out in front of troops and things like that to notify when an attack might come. And so it's really just an incredible story, and I mean, I think it was a great success story, especially there in Guam, which was where the second and third platoons were involved, which is the ones who were highlighted in the film.
What kind of successes were credited to these animals, and what kind of losses did they suffer?
They were used mostly to lead patrols and to sense and basically find the hidden enemy as they were moving through the jungles of Guam. And then they did almost 500 patrols, and they were never successfully ambushed. So that's considerable success, and that was just the kind of environment that any way that you could have an advantage by knowing that somebody was out there in front of you before you stumbled upon them was a big advantage. So, you know, they were used to great effect. The Japanese quickly found that these dogs were finding them, and so they began to shoot the dogs. And, there was quite a few dogs were killed there in combat as well. So we talk about that in the film.
What happened with the dogs after the war?
Well, after the war, the army euthanized, I think, pretty much most of their war dogs just because they felt like, because they were trained for combat and they were trained to be aggressive and they were afraid to bring them back into civilian life. But the Marines got their dogs from private citizens who donated them to the Marine Corps, and they'd promised them that they were going to give them their dogs back at the end of the war. And so they said, we can't just, euthanize their dogs. We agreed to return them. So they went into a detraining exercise, and then they basically trained, probably 95% of the dogs to lose that aggressiveness and to lose that edge and to be able to be reintegrated into society. And a lot of the guys, a lot of the dog handlers actually had wrote the owners of the dog and requested that they got to keep the dogs because it spent so much time with them and so much time clearly in combat and, in intense circumstances. And the bond was so close between them that they had asked if they could keep the dogs. And some of the families had gotten new dogs by then and felt like that was okay. And they certainly understood that bond that their dog had made with that handler, after 2 or 3 years of training and combat and being overseas together, that they felt like it was right that the soldier got to keep his dog.
The soldiers' own stories about their dogs was very touching. It was like watching them talk about their best friends or family members.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it's not just because this wasn't just a dog. This was somebody that most of the guys had all of the guys said that dog had saved their life. And so they felt like they owed their life to that dog. And so it was clearly not just a pet. I mean, it was somebody who they really felt like they owed their life to this dog. And so they just wanted to have the dog in their life, for the rest of their life. Plus, you're talking about a dog that was so well trained. I mean, I remember Bruce Wellington telling me, that after the war, he'd walk his dog every night. And he said, of course, I didn't have a leash. He wouldn't need a leash because the dog was so well disciplined that he would just do anything he said. So you're talking about, some dogs that were probably as well trained as any dog that's ever walked the earth, in terms of absolutely being disciplined and doing what their master asked. They often had silent signals that they could do, whether it's a silent whistle or, and then they worked off hand signals. And so it was just really amazing, the connection that they shared.
Have we learned anything from this program? Is this still going on?
It's interesting. After the World War II, they basically just dismantled the entire Marine War Dog program. And I know that Putney, he was a lieutenant of the 3rd Dog Platoon. He felt like, gosh, you guys really ought to keep this going. We had tremendous successes. And he was really sad to see it being dismantled. But then I think once in Vietnam, they began using war dogs again. And then it was dialed back after Vietnam. And just recently in Iraq, with the having such problems with IEDs and explosives there, the war dog program was dialed right back up, and it's really in full tilt right now. And so all the branches of service are using dogs, and it's really great. And that's actually what I'm working on now. Is I'm working on a follow up to War Dogs of the Pacific and telling the story of the military canines that are in service today in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Great. When can we expect to see this one?
Well, I'm just begun shooting that film right now, so that'll, I'm hoping in a year I can have it completely shot and edited and ready to go out there. But I screened the film for the Marines at Camp Lejeune, which is where the War Dogs of the Pacific Marines trained their dogs, and got great reactions from the Marines. And then afterwards, I talked to a lot of the canine Marines there, and just heard great stories and how they were making a real difference there. And the bond was still there, and the Marines were all sharing the feelings that, times may have changed, but that connection to, the handler and the dog, I just thought, well, this would be a great follow-up to that. And, there's a lot of men and women, canine MPs who are out there with their dogs, really making a difference. And I got to talk to other Marines, too, just infantry soldiers and Navy corpsmen, been with them on patrol. We're all speaking to, how effective they were.
Well, where can people find your movie?
Well, right now, the only place it's for sale is on Amazon. It was just recently aired on the Military Channel, and I'm hoping it'll have more viewings on the Military Channel. But right now, it's for sale on Amazon, and I'm trying to get it out to retailers as well. I'm looking to do that. So it's a independent filmmaker, and I'm just taking this out on my own, so I'm kind of self-distributing it. But I just feel like it's a story that wants to be out there, and I just want these guys' story to be told. And that's really what... started this whole thing is when I met Bill Putney. I really wanted to. I thought this would be the best war film ever, and what a great dog story. And I auctioned his book, Always Faithful, which is a great story of his experience with Marine war dogs. And I wrote a screenplay, and I was just about finished with the feature screenplay, and Bill passed away. And it really reminded me that. That the story is going away as each of these guys dies, and I but there's so many other dog handlers who didn't have a chance to tell their story. And so I started looking up all the dog handlers I could find and interviewing them and scanning their photos and things like that. And then eventually I started editing it together and made a documentary out of it. But it was really just an attempt to just want to preserve this incredible story.
Harris Dunn, thanks for a very touching documentary, and thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. I really appreciate you giving some attention to the story, and I just really want whatever I can do to pay tribute to these amazing guys, you know, I'm happy to do.
This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here are the things we've been talking about today on the Savage Nation. The town halls continue. The real town halls, not the stooge town halls, not the Stalinist fake town halls, not the Potemkin village town halls. The real town halls with real Americans outraged at this administration's attempt to hijack the greatest medical system in the world. You see, the Obamas and their minions, the Obama administration was hoping the news cycle would move on to another celebrity death, so they could get socialized medicine passed, but it didn't happen. Here's a sample of some of the anger that Obama has created in the American people.
The door slammed in my face. I'm even a taxpayer. I paid for this building. What's this about?
We've got some work to do. I don't mind, by the way, being responsible. I expect to be held responsible for these issues because I'm the president.
He hit me in my face on the left side and knocked me back to the floor, and that's when a woman started kicking me in the back of my head and in my back.
As I was walking in, I saw a lot of signs outside saying mean things about reforming health care.
I've seen some of those signs.
One day God's going to stand before you, and he's going to judge you.
You don't trust me? I don't know what else I can do.
We also talked about the shocking awards of the Medal of Freedom, how it's been hijacked by Obama the communist. Obama took a break from shoving socialized health care down America's throat to awarding the Presidential Medal of Freedom to a bunch of radical aging leftists. He gave one to Ted Kennedy, the most leftist senator in America, now that Obama is in the White House. In spite of his checkered past, in spite of his tarnished family name, in spite of his efforts to turn America into a Soviet-style nation, Obama laid it on thick about Kennedy. Listen to this rubbish.
There's a story Ted Kennedy sometimes tells. It's about a boy who sees an old man tossing starfish stranded by a receding tide back into the sea. "There are so many," asks the boy. "What difference can your efforts possibly make?" The old man studies the starfish in his hand and tosses it to safety, saying, "It makes a difference to that one." For nearly half a century, Ted Kennedy has been walking that beach, making a difference for that soldier fighting for freedom, that refugee looking for a way home, that senior searching for dignity, that worker striving for opportunity, that student aspiring to college, that family reaching for the American dream. The life of Senator Edward M. Kennedy has made a difference for us all.
Yeah, real big difference. It was Kennedy who told us that the Immigration Reform Act of 1965 would not change the demographics of America. Have you seen the tattoos in your neighborhood? Have you seen the number of prisoners with gang sigils from Nicaragua and El Salvador? Thank you, Ted. Now Obama also gave a Medal of Freedom to Mary Robinson. She's the former president of Ireland, who's also a vicious Jew hater and would rather see the Jews pushed into the sea rather than punish a single Palestinian terrorist. Well, you hear this rubbish.
The only girl in a family of four brothers, Mary Robinson, learned early on what it takes to make sure all voices are heard. As a crusader for women and those without a voice in Ireland, Mary Robinson was the first woman elected president of Ireland before being appointed UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. When she traveled abroad as president, she would place a light in her window that would draw people of Irish descent to pass by below. Today, as an advocate for the hungry and the hunted, the forgotten and the ignored, Mary Robinson has not only shone a light on human suffering, but illuminated a better future for our world.
Totally sickening. Obama also gave a Presidential Medal of Freedom to another radical leftist, Joe Lowery. Do you remember Lowery's racist speech that he gave at the inauguration? Let me jog your memory.
And in the joy of a new beginning, we ask you to help us work for that day when black will not be asked to get back, when brown can stick around, when yellow will be mellow, when the red man can get ahead, man, and when white will embrace what is right. Let all those who do justice and love mercy say amen.
Amen.
Say amen,
amen.
And amen.
Amen.
That's the racist who was given a high national honor today, and here's what Obama had to say about him.
Born and raised in Jim Crow, Alabama, preaching in his blood, the Reverend Joseph Lowery is a giant of the Moses generation of civil rights leaders.
Wait. Stop the tape. Did you just hear Obama compare him to Moses? Total insanity. Revisionist history. Okay, keep going.
Of the Moses generation of civil rights leaders. It was just King, Lowery, and a few others huddled in Montgomery who laid the groundwork for the bus boycott and the movement that was to follow. The founder of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Lowery was later asked to serve as president. He agreed to serve for 1 year, but wound up serving, as he puts it, for 20 one-year terms. Throughout his life, some have called him crazy. But one of my favorite sermons that I heard Dr. Lowery once deliver, he said, there's good crazy and there's bad crazy. And sometimes you need a little bit of that good crazy to make the world a better place.
I guess they're both a little crazy. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Healthcare and tort reform. You know, lost in Obama's massive attempt to make socialized medicine a reality in the country is reining in the lawyers, or tort reform. You see, in order to avoid lawsuits, doctors practice what's known as defensive medicine. What that is based on fear of being sued instead of the patient's best interests. So, the threat of frivolous lawsuits costs doctors and hospitals a tremendous amount of money. And so what they do is they do tests that they don't need just to avoid a lawsuit. That drives up medical costs. The Massachusetts Medical Society reports that 83% of doctors say they practice defensive medicine. This results in a huge number of needless tests and procedures each year. Did you know that 25% of all CAT scans, MRIs, and ultrasounds were done strictly for defensive reasons? If this number is extrapolated to total healthcare spending, it comes to a total of $500 billion a year. Did you hear that? A half a trillion a year. A half a trillion dollars that could be eliminated with tort reform. Tort reform would cap damages and stop punitive damages in medical cases. But the Democrats are avoiding even discussing this because they're owned by the trial lawyers, who are some of their biggest contributors. Did you know that Obama's head of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius, was the head of the Kansas Trial Lawyers Association for almost 10 years? That's right. And what does Obama have to say about tort reform? Well, when he addressed the American Medical Association recently, he said, I want to be honest with you. I'm not advocating caps on malpractice awards, which I personally believe can be unfair to people who've been wrongfully harmed, close quote. See, he's on the side of the greedy lawyers. You see that? And Obama apparently hasn't read the studies which show that reforms which limit liability, such as caps and damages, certainly reduced hospital expenditures by 5 to 9% and led to virtually no differences in mortality or major complications. But that's what you would expect from Obama. He's on the side of the lawsuits. These reforms would reduce costs, reduce government intervention in health care, and increase choice for patients and providers. But Obama is more interested in a payday for trial lawyers than he is for real reform. What Chairman Obama is offering will result in uncontrolled government spending, more taxes to pay for it, and a socialist bureaucracy with enormous power. If Obama really wanted to cut health care costs for Americans, he'd cut the lawyers loose and let the doctors do their job. But he doesn't want to cut costs. He wants to increase costs. And he doesn't want better health care. He just wants better control over your life. And that's what he, the lawyers, the bureaucrats, and the death panels will get if you don't keep speaking out and shouting out at town hall meetings across America. Remember what I just said. It's the lawyers, stupid. So I understand that the jerk who runs CNN, Mr. Klein, which means small, Mr. Smallman of CNN has banned talk show hosts from CNN. Now, of course, I've never been invited on CNN because I can mop the floor up with them, as is true with any other network. The reason they don't want me on is I can mop the floor up with five of them at once. But he said that we need serious debate right now. We can't have anyone from talk radio on CNN. Well, I've given you serious debate, and I'm on talk radio, right? I'm a talk radio host. I didn't just give you rhetoric. I gave you three ways to save between $500 billion and $1 trillion a year in the medical system. What's intriguing to me is that Obama, the imposter, is trying to impose European-style medical care in America. Now, whether or not you want it or not is one thing. But he's not putting in the controls that the European medical system has to go with it, such as lawsuit controls. If I'm not mistaken, and we're researching it right now, the socialized medical systems in Europe do not permit the kinds of lawsuits that the crooks with law degrees practice here in America. I think that there are strict caps on lawsuits to do with medical malpractice in Europe. How come the great Obama, who's trying to impose a European system on us, won't impose some of the controls? Because he was put in primarily by special interests like the American Trial Lawyers Association. So I've given you that. Cap the lawsuits. Cut off all care to illegal aliens. They're not citizens. Make them pay for it. And the third one, I can give you a third, fourth, fifth. I can give you five different ways to save money. You haven't heard one of these things in the debates, have you? Now you know why they don't want Michael Savage on television. Kansas City, Bridget, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation. You disagree on tort reform. Tell us why.
Because I think there are some legitimate cases where $250,000 is just not fair. It's not fair.
Well, not fair to who?
Well, it's not fair to me personally
Tell us about your case.
I had a hysterectomy, and during the procedure, the doctor put a stitch through the rectum, which tore open, and they didn't listen to me tell them I wasn't feeling well, I wasn't doing well, and a week later, I was full of what's supposed to come out the other end. Septic shock.
Horrible. And what happened? You couldn't collect on that lawsuit?
No. I spent 6 weeks in a coma. I almost died like four times.
I'm saying, did your lawyer sue the hospital or doctor?
Tried to.
And what happened?
We finally settled before it got to court, but for you know, a pittance.
Well, why did you settle?
He did. The doctor.
But why? You just said that you don't want tort reform. And now you're telling me you had a lawyer who sued and settled. So it's not making sense. You weren't impacted by any kind of limits on medical liability. You were impacted by your lawyer who settled for you.
We settled in advance of our, whatever your limit is. You're to your limit.
All right. Thank you for the call. Well, let me put it to you this way. There probably are egregious examples of medical malpractice that no amount of money could pay for. I agree with that. But when you balance out the entire system of medical malpractice claims, you have to understand that it will balance itself out. You take a guy like John Edwards. He made hundreds of millions of dollars. Remember John Edwards? He made hundreds of millions of dollars convincing juries in the Ozarks, moonshine, the descendants of moonshiners, who was sitting there, didn't understand anything, but the pretty boy comes in and tells him, this poor person was injured by the doctor, when in fact he knew it was a congenital disease, that the person was born that way. It had nothing to do with the hospital or doctor. But old John Edwards convinced the Ozarkians that the doctor was at fault, and he broke out many. He destroyed hospitals and doctors across the Southeast. So what I'm saying is you get rid of some of these vultures. Well, what more is there to be said? Play some music. I take you back to another time in America. Let us say when John F. Kennedy was president, when a Democrat was more conservative than today's Republicans. You understand what I just said to you? Do you realize, and I've said this for over 10 years now, that by today's standards, the Republican Party has moved so far to the left and so lost its bearings that John F. Kennedy, by today's standards, would be a conservative compared to the Republicans of today. And, of course, the Democrats today are the communists or the neo-Marxists. They don't even understand where they are, nor do they care. They don't care where they are politically. They do not care at all. Neither do I at this point. They're sinking as fast as the 51st Ward can sink. The American people, it's sinking into the American people that Obama is basically a front man for the Daily Machine and that they're treating the White House as though it's the 51st Ward of Chicago. In other words, it's entered their mind already. So here we are. Now, I'm telling you, I'm taking you back in time. So I'm reading biographies. Hemingway is one of my heroes. Etc. and so on. And I, you know, read the New Yorker. There were other magazines that were out that I was reading. I forget them, but I'm running so short of time I could scream. First of all, I have a mug. I ate too much radicchio last night, which is so acidic, I'll never eat it again. Can they serve me lettuce? Why do I have to eat? Everything's a trick. When I grew up, there was vinegar. Now everything's a trick vinegar. $5,000 a bottle, like wine now. Why does everything have to be special? You ask for a cup of coffee, you got coffee in my day. Now it's 50 different varieties. The same garbage with different prices. Mochiata, macchiata, lacamata, lacawana, choo-choo. What do I have to eat radicchio for? I have a migraine from the acid. So I'm in a bad mood to begin with. I'm going to play for you a piece of the interview on the podcast of the author of the article, Party of One, Profile of Michael Savage. Profile of Michael Savage by Mr. Senna. Right now from the New Yorker on the Savage Nation, fire
Michael
away.
Savage is one of the most popular conservative talk radio hosts in the country. His show, The Savage Nation, reaches more than 8 million listeners each week.
We so-called conservatives are actually the liberals of America. And the so-called liberals are the actual fascists of America.
Savage's disdain for the left is savage. One of his many books is called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. But listeners to his show get a lot more than politics, as Kalafasana tells us in his profile this week. Welcome back, Kay.
Thanks.
So the election of Barack Obama has put conservatives back in the opposition, and that has re-energized talk radio. Is that what got you interested in doing this piece? And why did you pick Michael Savage of all the conservative talk show hosts?
That's part of what got me interested in doing this piece. I'd heard him over the years and found myself listening to him a bunch last year during the election. And he was interesting partly because he seemed to be so off-message.
Oh, I know what you're expecting, but you're not going to get it from me. You'll have to go to one of the other talk show hosts to get... Obama's a Marxist, and McCain is a war hero. If that's what you want from now until November, you're in the wrong you're on the wrong dial position.
Savage, despite being identified as a conservative talk show host, didn't really seem to like McCain that much.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely hated Obama. Didn't really like Bush.
So he was reacting really differently than the other conservative hosts.
Well, you know, most of the other conservative hosts, no matter what the problems they might have had with McCain, mm-hmm. were they certainly supported him.
Right.
And Savage really didn't. But Savage has always been a really kind of unusual, weird guy. His mm-hmm. radio show isn't like anyone else's radio show.
Right. So he talks a lot less about politics than a lot of other talk show hosts.
Well, he's a lot less single-minded. He has this weird cluster of interests. He's mm-hmm. interested in herbal medicine. Mm-hmm. He's interested in animals. He loves food. He loves to tell stories about, you know, New York in the 50s and 60s. And he loves to talk about his life in a really unusual way. He has this kind of melancholy, depressive streak. And,
mm-hmm.
and so the takeaway isn't necessarily, you know, we're going to rally the troops and we're going to get this done politically. The takeaway is often, I'm probably going to go home gentleman drink tonight. And and that makes him a really interesting, really compelling character on the radio.
When the New Yorker comes up on a show like Savage's or Rush's, it's generally not in glowing terms. No. Michael Savage is, my guess, not a longtime subscriber to the magazine.
Well, he is a longtime reader.
Savage.
Battle over health care taking the spotlight, we have to be careful not to forget other bills working their way through Congress. One we have to keep our eyes on is the Waxman-Markey cap-and-trade scam. Joining us now from the Heritage Foundation is Ben Lieberman.
Thanks, Michael. Well, it's clear that the cap-and-trade bill, the Waxman-Markey bill that narrowly passed the House and awaits consideration in the Senate, is very expensive and amounts to nothing more than an energy tax in disguise. After all, when you sweep aside all the complexities about how cap-and-trade operates, and make no mistake, this is the most convoluted attempt at economic central planning this nation has ever attempted, the bottom line is that cap-and-trade works by raising the cost of energy high enough so that individuals and businesses are forced to use less of it. Inflicting economic pain is what this is all about. That's how the ever-tightening emissions targets will be met. And this is all to fight the exaggerated threat of global warming.
Well, what are these costs?
Well, a Heritage Foundation analysis came up with cost figures. For a household of four, energy costs go up $436 per year in the first year the bill takes effect in 2012, and they eventually reach $1,241 in 2035, and average over $800 annually over that span. Electricity costs go up 90% by 2035, gasoline by 58%, and natural gas by 55% by 2035. The cumulative higher energy costs for a family of four by then will be nearly $20,000. But direct higher energy costs are only part of the consumer impact. Nearly everything goes up, since higher energy costs raise production costs. If you look at the total cost of Waxman-Markey, it works out to an average of nearly $3,000 annually from 2012 to 2035 for a household of four. By 2035 alone, the cost would be $4,600. Beyond the cost impact on individuals and households, Waxman-Markey also affects employment, and especially employment in the manufacturing sector. We estimate job losses averaging over 1 million at any given time from 2012 to 2035. And note that these are net job losses after the much-typed dream jobs are taken into account. Some of the lost jobs will be destroyed entirely, while others will be outsourced to nations like China and India that have repeatedly stated that they'll never hamper their own economic growth with energy cost boosting global warming measures like Waxman-Markey. And since farming is energy intensive, that sector will be particularly hard hit. Higher gasoline and diesel fuel costs, higher electricity costs, and higher natural gas-derived fertilizer costs all erode farm profits, which are expected to drop by 28% in 2012 and average 57% lower through 2035. As with American manufacturers, Waxman-Markey also puts American farmers at a global disadvantage, as other food-exporting nations would have no comparable energy price-raising measures in place. Overall, Waxman-Markey reduces gross domestic product by an average of $393 billion annually between 2012 and 2035, and cumulatively by $9.4 trillion. In other words, the nation will be $9.4 trillion poorer with Waxman-Markey than without it.
But these costs are not distributed evenly, are they?
Low-income households spend a disproportionate share of their incomes on energy, and thus would be hit harder than average by Waxman-Markey. Of course, the bill has provisions to give back some revenues to low-income households, but it's unlikely that these rebates will amount to anything more than just a portion of the dollar that it costs people in the first place. Waxman-Markey also hurts those parts of the country, especially the Midwest and South, that still have a substantial number of manufacturing jobs to lose, as well as those that rely more heavily than others on coal for electric generation. In addition, because the bill raises energy costs, it hurts rural America much more than urban America. Rural Americans, both farmers and non-farmers, spend an average of 58% more on energy as a percentage of income than their urban counterparts, and those costs would go up. The disproportionate burdens also affect certain parts of the country, like the West. Coal mining will be very hard hit, so Montana and Wyoming and other coal-producing states will see this important sector of the economy shrink. Western oil and natural gas producers will face higher costs as well. The promise of oil shale in Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming will never be realized under Waxman Markey. And as I mentioned, agriculture is hard hit, and that particularly includes ranching and farming operations common in parts of the West. So there are many parts of the country and many sectors of the economy and many categories of persons that will be hit harder by Waxman Markey than the nation as a whole. But the nation as a whole will suffer significantly under this ill-advised global warming bill.
Thanks, Ben. I've said this before. This bill is a killer. All right, here's what's on michaelsavage.com. The Time magazine has published an article on the 25 people to blame for the financial crisis. It's very interesting, but they've left out all the Democrat congressmen who caused it, including Bonnie Frank. They seem to be all Republicans. It is certainly a rogues gallery, and they're certainly guilty, in my opinion, but there's no Democrats on it, including Bonnie Frank. Are you surprised by Time magazine? There's another article from the Wall Street Journal you shouldn't miss by Dorothy Rabinowitz of the Wall Street Journal, Obama's Out of Touch with America. You got to understand that this is amazing. He's melting down. His con is over. Do not miss the article, Out of the Nazi Era, Out of the Nazi Era, the Soviet Era. Michael Savage was found guilty without a trial, and he's still banned in the UK. You're not going to believe what I'm telling you, but the left-wing radical government in England sent me a letter that said I must repudiate my views, even views I don't have. It's something out of the Soviet Union before the wall came down, and yet nobody in the major American media will cover this. It's unbelievable to me. A Democrat congressman named Barron Hill says that the town hall protesters are political terrorists. Did you hear this? Political terrorists. So actual Americans are political terrorists. These congressmen are the terrorists, and they're being... Well, I'll let you figure it out. A poster came up showing Obama as Hitler. It turns out the poster was a Democrat union plant. In other words, it was set up to make it look like Obama was attacked racially, but it was his own people who did it. The big news of the day is that the AARP says the president lied, in essence. Obama said the AARP is aboard his program. They said they aren't. Well, if that's not a lie, I'd like to know what is. I guess it was a misunderstanding. Oh, and by the way, George Soros gave out $175 million in free money. By the best of my analysis, he makes that about every week as a result of insider information from his friends in the Obama administration. That's my opinion. So to him, $175 million is chicken feed. He's just given back basically a tip of what he actually makes by trading money in the temple. This is the Savage Nation. Read michaelsavage.com.
Savage.